Freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who unbewildered know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Please repeat. Those who are free from false prestige,
delusion,
and false association, who
understand the eternal,
who are done with material lusts, who are free from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who unbewildered know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Not so easy. Oh, just a few things. Freedom from false prestige, delusion, false association, lust, dualities, being unbewildered, except just being a little surrender. So this is Shri Prabhupada's purport. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Because of the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature, it is very difficult for him to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not lord of material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. And when it's free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. One is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion. For although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the material world. He thus makes all things complicated, and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, this earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. One is free from such a false notion, he becomes free from all false associations caused by familial, social, and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions, such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes full of knowledge, then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nirmana mahajita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritti kama vandvara mukta sukadrita sangha vichantya muda padam aryam tat. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are free from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who unbewildered know how to surrender to the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Ram Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasadi Gaya Srimadevi Bhakti Vidanta Swami Priyamane Namaste Sai Krishna Deve Gauravani Vichyane Nari Shesha Shinti Vahi Pashtyajya Desvitane. Process of going back to the spiritual kingdom is mentioned here. In one sense, it sounds quite complicated, but in another sense, it's not so complicated. All we do is have to understand what is eternal, namely that we're eternal, that we're not this body. Although for some it may seem quite complicated to understand that we're not this body, but to speak of living according to that philosophy. But it is simply a question of utilizing our intelligence. Gradually speaking, every time we go over Krishna's quote in Bhagavad Gita 2.16, then it's not so difficult to understand the difference between ourselves and the body. Because, as Krishna said,
all of us are seeing that our body's changing. I don't think there's anyone who's going to claim that their body is not changing, unless they're completely crazy. But everyone has experience of a changing body. But everyone knows that in spite of all the different changes of body, that they're the same person. If someone claims I'm a different person, then how do they know they're a different person? Who is the other person who's in the body? Where'd that person go? Your mother comes up to you and says, you know, my child, you know, I'm not your child, I'm a different person. Your child left around 3 weeks ago. Everyone knows, everyone takes it granted that although the body is very different, that the soul, the person who's conscious within the body, is the same conscious soul. But somehow or another, we're merging our identities into this material existence, and therefore we're thinking ourselves to be this body. But here it says that this is due to illusion. And Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Jayate Visham Pum Sam Sangate Shubha Jayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Krodo Vijayate. He explains that the reason why we're in this illusion is that we're falsely trying to think ourselves to be the laws of this material nature. Just like here, many of our devotees and guests are from Belgium, or I'm from America, originally this body. But we say, this is my land, I'm Belgian. Belgium is my country. So here, who here owns Belgium? Does anyone here own Belgium? They can claim Belgium is my country? No one really thinks that they're the proprietor of Belgium, but the people of America. Everyone knows that they're the servants of Belgium. The government will remind you constantly that you're the servant. You have to follow the road signs, you have to pay your taxes, you have to follow all the directions of the government, that no one is independent here in Belgium. And those who think themselves independent, they are usually in the jail, and then they have to follow all the jail rules, which are even more rules. Everyone is a servant of Belgium, but they allow everyone to think that it is their country. Very cheap, doesn't cost anyone any money. Walk around thinking, my country, my house, my car, my family. But in practice, no one is the lord of anything here. Everyone is the servant. If someone has a car, then they say it's my car. But what, if it was your car, why do you have to pay for the mortgage, mortgage on it? Why do you have to pay for the loan? Why do you have to fix the car? Why do you have to pay for the gas? Why do you have to pay taxes for the road? Why do you have to drive in a certain way? Why actually you're a servant of the car? And if you have two cars, then you're serving two cars. You have twice as much service to do. But neither were the servant, neither were the master of this body, nor the master of our car or anything else in the material world. Everyone is a servant, but due to illusion, we think ourselves to be the masters. And here it mentions, what is the force which is driving our service on? It is principally lust. As soon as we misidentify ourselves as the proprietors and illusion, then lust will tell us how to serve in the material world. Therefore, it is not that anyone is independent. Lust is compelling everyone to do different things. And when we can satisfy lust, then it turns into greed, which is even more intense. And then greed, when it can't be satisfied, turns into anger. You can see that world events nowadays, that people are lusty, that our land is not enough for us. We want your land too. And then if people don't surrender immediately, then they become angry. How dare you not realize that we're God here? We'll just, you know, take everything over. And then instead of identifying themselves as the proprietors of a little bit of land, then they expand it and expand it, just like the Roman Empire or Napoleon, whatever. and after a while they expand themselves in such a way that they explode, and then someone else comes along to say that we're the proprietors now. Those guys are gone and dead, and now it was left for us. Until they expand, and then they explode also, and someone else comes along. Prabhupada mentioned that there was one Prime Minister of India. He thought that without me, nothing could go on in India. Everything would collapse. Therefore, even he was in the minister for 19 years, Prime Minister, and he had a heart attack. The doctor said, you only have a few days left to live. But he wouldn't leave. He said, if I die, everything will fall apart. I must stay here. And then he died, left his body, and the astrologer said that after leaving his body, he came back as one of two dogs in Sweden. So he thought everything was depending upon me. But now the only thing he has that's depending upon him is some master who hopes that he'll bark once in a while at the dog. So this is certainly illusion. And it is not that I'm making it up. That the fact is that everyone is a spiritual soul, and the whole world is moving under this false conception that we're something other than a spiritual being, and that we're something other than a servant of our circumstances. The whole world, for instance, is revolving around us, and hardly we can do anything. We're just reacting to all the different circumstances that we find ourselves under. If your mother comes into the house, you have to smile and maybe kiss her on the cheek. And then your worst enemy comes, you growl a little bit. Then the dog comes, you have to take him out. Everyone is having so many obligations at every moment, so many things to do with service. But here it says that one has to understand who we are, become free from these illusions and this false association. That my real business is to go on to catch these, serving all these misconceptions that I've developed. That I have nothing to do except for, working hard all day long, just serving all my misconceptions. I serve my body, serve my family, serve my society, serve my nation, serve all these misconceptions that there's nothing else to do. We've called Sangha Dosha, and that's solved if we understand that we're eternal. Vinivritakama, and that there's some alternative other than serving us. There was one psychologist when I went to college, which is probably ancient history nowadays, but they taught psychology. It was gradually the epic of psychology, the psychology boom. And the major psychologist, his name was B.F. Skinner, number one atheist. I think he said something that if there's a God, we'll find where he is and we'll kill him. Nice guy. Quite an atheist. His philosophy was that everyone is more or less a dog. He used the Pavlov's experiment, where Pavlov would ring a little bell, and then the dog would come and eat the food. And he'd ring a little bell, Pavlov is, and the dog would come and salivate and then eat the food. And then he'd ring a little bell, and the dog would salivate and he would give him any food. In other words, just by hearing the bell, the dog would have a reaction. It's called stimuli and reflex, conditioned reflex. So according to Pavlov, everyone is going to be a dog. That whatever we're doing means that we're coming in contact with certain stimuli and we're getting a certain response to it. And the only difference between a dog and a human being is that a dog has a tail and a human being doesn't. But our philosophy is actually different. That there's a term proactive. Proactive actually comes from the meaning that in between the stimuli and the response or the reflex action, there's a possibility of considering what is our proper response. That's a human being. the others are actually animals. What is the proper response? And that proper response can only be determined by hearing from persons who are beyond simply the animal level of existence. Modern society, they teach one how to become a bigger animal. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, one of our acharyas, teachers in our line, he said that in the beginning when one is born, one is a more or less ignorant. And then by training and modern education, one becomes less than an animal. Instead of training persons to consider thoughtfully what their response should be under different circumstances, they're taught just if it feels good, then you just respond in any way you feel like you responding. And then they can't understand why is it that little children are becoming uncontrolled. We're teaching them how to be more or less spontaneous in their reaction to gratify whatever desire they have, and then at the same time we're expecting them to be highly disciplined. So that's a contradiction. Because like you've all probably heard that in the 1950s they did a survey trying to understand what are the problems in the schools in America. And they found out they had serious problems. Like sometimes the children would talk during class to each other. Sometimes they'd even throw paper airplanes in the room. And then in 1990, they did a similar survey, and they found the problems became a little bit more serious. Like the major problem is that sometimes the children would shoot and kill the teacher in the school. And the other problem is that and during class, they shoot up in the back of the classroom heroin. So these problems have become progressively a little bit more worse. And they can't understand why we're giving them such a nice education. We're telling them, whatever you feel like doing, just do it, because you're an animal. And that if you're a successful animal, then you'll be able to gratify your senses more than anyone else. All you do is have to learn how to make a lot of money, and then do whatever you feel like it, as long as you don't get caught. Therefore, if one wants to have a successful life beyond simply gratifying the demands of the senses, which are constantly arising, one has to become a little thoughtful what actually to do with our present body, what to think about, how to see things properly. One has to become trained up by higher authorities. And here the higher authorities saying, the first thing we have to realize is that there is a God, and we're not that God. Most people will think, yes, there is a God, and I'm God. Or there is a God, and God and myself, we have some partnership. I pray to him, and he just gives me whatever I want. Otherwise, it feels off. You're not God anymore. Get lost. That there is a God, and he's the proprietor of everything. We can't do anything in this body. Nothing is going on in this material world outside his jurisdiction. And that if we render service unto him, the result is that we get the opportunity to be able to hear about him, be able to think about him. We become conscious of him, conscious of what is the proper way of doing things in such a way to benefit ourselves and to benefit others. That we get the opportunity to become a little thoughtful, that before we do something, we consider what is the value of that activity and what the results will be. In other words, become learned in the science of activity, in the science of work. And by such work, one can come to progressively more and more realization so that God and the laws of material nature become revealed to one, and therefore there's no longer any doubts or confusion how to work progressively in order to obtain higher and higher levels of understanding and realization. And that's called surrender. It is not that surrender means that, you know, God is a big boss, and if I don't listen to him, he's going to take his lightning bolt and throw it on me and hit my head. Oh, God. Or God is some person in some clouds sitting on a chair, and there's no face. you go there, you see this big person, no face. And you think, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And then he looks on the scoreboard, because he has an IBM scoreboard now, and looking at all his pious and impious activities, and says, too bad. You've been a bad boy. And then he takes you in his hands, and then throws you into the burning fire. And go. And all the angels gather around and say, wow, did you see that one burn? That was fire. Throw another one in. So this is not, this is some people's conception of God. Or you come before God and he sees you and he says, looks at the scoreboard and says, ah, so nice. And then he hands you a hawk. And he says, play. And then you sit there eternally. You go, wow, it's getting really boring here. And he starts thinking, maybe it would have been better off if I would have went to hell. Because at least in hell there's rock music there. Things would have been actually moving a little bit more. So these conceptions of God, of course, is such that no one would be very much interested in becoming God. But the conception of God is that not only he's the controller of everything, but he's moving everything in order to help people come to a higher level of existence. And the highest level of existence is to become God conscious, where we can see that Krishna is the most wonderful person. As everyone is looking to love someone, so Krishna has unlimited love for all living entities. He has unlimited affection, he has unlimited beauty, he has unlimited strength, he has unlimited fame, he has unlimited wealth, he has unlimited knowledge, he has unlimited everything, and therefore he's always becoming more and more wonderful. Anyone who becomes conscious of Krishna finds that he's always more and more wonderful. And that eternally in the spiritual world, where everyone is exchanging, or the spiritual world means the exchange of loving feelings, that everyone there is becoming more and more excited at every moment about how wonderful everything is. And here, in the material world, in the absence of God, where everyone's fighting to become God, we can see that everyone is losing. Nothing progressive is going on here in terms of real relationships, because all it is business fighting with each other, trying to trick each other, that I'm God, no, you're not God, I'm God, and people are fighting with each other. Probably gives the example, just like people go, they go to the United Nations, and in order to make so-called peace in the material world. But everyone's going to the United Nations with the idea that I am representing my country, and that your country should surrender to my country. Just like dogs on the street, they urinate along a certain length of the street, and as soon as another dog comes, they go, "Rawr, get away, it's my area." So they're going with this dogish mentality to the United Nations, and they're all going, "I'm American, I'm Russian, I'll bite you." "Oh no, please don't bite me." So with this dogish mentality, they're simply barking at each other. And then they can't understand why there's no peace. Because the mentality is all wrong. The whole conception is wrong. They're claiming that they're the proprietors, that they're the enjoyers of this land. But who's enjoying the land? Who keeps proprietorship? At every moment, our bodies are changing. Who's stopping their body from changing? And the final change is called death. But everyone is dying. Adolf Hitler, he died. Winston Churchill died. No. Peter Pan is growing older. Everyone is dying. You read the latest article, Trouble in Never Never Land. That no one lives here forever. everyone grows up. And then not only do they grow up, they grow down also. And who's doing that? Krishna says, Kalasmi, Mritu Sarva Harashaha. As time, I'm coming and taking everything away. So the only ruler of this material world is time. Time is controlling everything, and everyone is under the jurisdiction of time. And those who are intelligent, they can see it, and they surrender ultimately to the Supreme Person who can take us beyond time, beyond this material time, to the spiritual realm where one can realize who we actually are. But we can realize our spiritual identity and begin our real activities, which are simply to expand our loving service to Krishna. The realm where everyone enjoys unlimited happiness, because there's nothing but loving exchanges. There's no envy, there is no competition to become the Lord. Everyone recognizes Krishna as being the Lord, and Krishna, he's the servant of everyone. Although he's the Lord of everyone, telling everyone what to do, but he's simply giving instructions how everyone can develop their love more and more for everyone. So the world, where from God to the living entities, everyone is simply developing more and more love, and everyone's very happy. And therefore everyone is the world of surrender. As God is asking everyone to surrender, so God in one sense can surrender to everyone, because he's busily engaging in trying to fulfill our desires in the material world, and the spiritual world he's also trying to please all his devotees. As his devotees are trying to please him, so he's also trying to please his devotees. But here in this material world, where one wants to be pleased, one is demanding that God give them more and more material facility. God is not very happy about that, because he knows that people will not become happy by getting one body after another. Even when we get the body of Brahma, even when we get the body of an important person in this material world, just like on this earth planet, who's the most important person? President Bush. Right now he was thinking, I am God. If I look the wrong way, then all the evil countries will disintegrate. But do we think he's happy? Does anyone want to be President Bush here, right now? What is his future? Will he become fortunate enough to become one or two dogs in Sweden? We doubt it. He's not that pious. What will be his future? It won't be very bright. Therefore, instead of making an effort to so-called make progress in the digital world, we can make progress in spiritual consciousness by recognizing God as our friend, Spirit, and that he is the proprietor of everything here, and that he is everything here is actually meant for his enjoyment. And especially in this day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come, and he showed us how, without any material opulence, without anything, even without any present knowledge. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to his spiritual master, and his spiritual master calls him a fool, Morka. He said, you're a fool, don't even bother studying Vedanta Sutra. Just chant Hare Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started to chant Hare Krishna, and tears of ecstasy came to his eyes, and he was so many symptoms of ecstasy, and he went to spiritual master and said, what's going on? He said, don't worry about it, just keep on chanting. So this chanting is so nice, it doesn't require any material opulence, and the result of chanting is that one becomes absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and Krishna's devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the result of that is that one reawakens one's feelings towards Krishna and all of the entities. One experiences the relief, Keto, Dharpana, Marjana, all these desires to lord over material nature, to be something other than Krishna's servant, they gradually become erased from the heart. And Bhava Mahadevami Nirvapanam, all these lusty feelings, greedy, angry, frustrated, all these psychological problems that we have, that people spend thousands of dollars for a psychiatrist to take care of, is also as crazy, as more crazy than the patient. That all these things become wiped away. Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam, and the moon of knowledge the waxing moon of knowledge, we are able to see things. We are able to see that everyone is eternal. They may be in different bodies, but there's a soul in every body, and that there's a supreme soul along with that soul. Shayakaya Chandrika Vitana Vidyavaru Jivana Anandam Buddhi Vardhana. And one can feel in Krishna's presence, in the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, unlimited love and ecstasy, pleasure, transcendental pleasure, and the loving exchanges that Krishna has with his devotees. Ananda Buddhi Varanam Padit Panam Panamitas Varanam Sarvatma Snaparam Parangi Gayate Shri Krishna Sankirtan. That the Sankirtan movement is really the benediction that for everyone in this age. Because how much can we, without the Hare Krishna mantra, without this chanting of Hare Krishna, without, how much can we actually even understand these books? That by the chanting of Hare Krishna, by the giving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, association, how we can understand practically, directly, by Bhakta Bhagavam Dharanam Susukam Kartimavya, we can directly experience what means transcendental happiness. And then we can understand what's the difference between living as a ghost-like person in the material world, blindly following what everyone else is telling us to do to so-called be happy, all the miserable people telling us what to do to become happy. It's like some person writes a book, How to Become a Millionaire. He can't even pay his rent because he's writing some book, How to Become a Millionaire. If he knew how to become a millionaire, then why can't he pay his rent? Why doesn't he become a millionaire? He's writing some book, hoping that people will buy it so he can pay his rent. But anyway, everyone's telling us how to become happy. Whole philosophy, huge universities, courses, and self-improvement, and all the people who are doing these things are all miserable, morose, jumping off bridges, taking sleeping pills, and they're telling us, become happy. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can read his life, he was actually really happy. Prabhupada, he was actually happy. I remember one time I was in Buffalo, the University of Buffalo, and Prabhupada was giving a lecture there, and at the end of the lecture, one student stood up in a very challenging way, saying, Swamiji, are you really happy? Sometimes those who are devotees, people ask these type of questions in a very challenging way. They always go, yes, of course, So Prabhupada was a little bit more reserved. He said, well, if I told you, would you believe it? And rather than becoming a little submissive and thoughtful, this person goes, no, Swamiji, come on, tell us, come on, we really want to know, are you really happy? Brody, well, if I told you, would you believe me? No, come on, Swamiji, tell us, why are you hiding these things? Tell us, are you really happy? The Prabhupada looked at him and he had this enormous smile, this beautiful smile on his face, and said, yes, I'm actually happy. And then this boy, his big smile went, and he sat down and everyone went, Jai Prabhupada! The Prabhupada was actually really happy. One time one person came up to him and said, Swamiji, my mind. Sometimes you hear that, my mind. The Prabhupada said, well, all I can do is give you a Hare Krishna mantra. I have nothing else to give you. The Prabhupada didn't claim he had this great philosophy and everything else. Actually, he claimed that the gift he was giving everyone was the same gift that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, the gift of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That if we take the gift of the Hare Krishna Mantra, try to learn how to chant very nicely, lovingly, attentively, not so complicated, then we'll get everything. And if we think, oh, there's so much philosophy, where did the jiva come from, and I'll spend three lifetimes researching where the jiva came from. I have a friend named Jiva. He came from Brooklyn, by the way. So I know where Jiva came from. But if we're going to research these things, so many different philosophies, this moth, that moth, this thing, that thing. And we don't have any time to chant Hare Krishna. Too busy researching everything but the process that will bring us back to Godhead. We think of everything except for Krishna. So that is recommended that Krishna says, Man Mana, first of all, just think of me, Mad Bhakto, and become my devotee. All these other things, at the time of death, wherever the jiva came from, won't matter. It will be matter where you're going. That's going to be the important thing. Even you know where the jiva came from, but if you're going to hell, it's not going to do you very much good. And if you're going back to the spiritual world, then, you know, who cares where you know you came from? It's important where you're going. And the Hare Krishna mantra, if we study these books to learn how to chant Hare Krishna very nicely, then the Hare Krishna mantra will bring us back to our spiritual consciousness and give us an awareness of how to properly reciprocate with all living entities. That will give us the awareness of how, instead of endeavoring futilely become the lord of others, how to properly learn how to serve them and be happy about it. Here we may have to be a servant, but we're unhappy about it. But Krishna consciousness means how to be happy serving all living entities and ultimately learning how to see everyone in relationship to the most wonderful person, Krishna, and the most wonderful energy of Krishna, Srimati Radharani, and therefore be very happy and pleased with whatever service they're giving us, both others. So, thank you. Any questions?
When you study books related to chanting Mahamantra, for example, the Hare Krishna Mantra, then you hear that we should gradually improve our chanting, also the quantity of our chanting. Beginning is recommended to chant 4 rounds, and then 1 hour, and then 64. It's like the advice is given to increase also the quantity of our rounds. So it's about sometimes mentioned that over the years or devotees should also increase, if they grow older, they should gradually increase their number of rounds, or did you just focus on quality?
Well, first quality and then quantity. It's hard enough to get people to chant 16 rounds, but to speak of telling everyone to chant more. Of course, one time I was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, he was talking to us for a few hours. And every once in a while, Prabhupada would stop and pick up his bead bag and start going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he said, if you have any time, then start chanting Hare Krishna. And he did that a few times during the conversation or the preaching that he's doing. The Prabhupada expected Kirtani Apsada Hari, we would always chant Hare Krishna. But the fact is that there's nothing but Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna's service. And if we get a little taste for the Hare Krishna mantra, if we chant Hare Krishna at one time, a little taste, that will encourage us to chant and try and find that same taste. And the next time we chant Hare Krishna, and the next time. And therefore no one will have to ask us to increase the number of rounds, because we'll always try and find more, we'll find more and more taste in the chanting. So that depends upon quality. And if we're chanting millions of rounds, or 198 rounds every day, shnik shnik, ram ram, day 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 day, hey kitty kitty, hey kitty kitty, that won't be very helpful. So if we chant Hare Krishna within our prescribed number of times, you know, chanting very attentively and feelingly in such a way that spontaneously remembering Lord Krishna, we're remembering his associates, we're remembering their pastimes, remembering that we're experiencing their loving feelings towards each other, that we're becoming more and more conscious of Krishna, then no one will have to ask us to chant more rounds. We won't be able to stop chanting. So first quality and then quantity. In all these books, when I mention the Hare Krishna mantra, there's nothing but the Hare Krishna mantra. The Hare Krishna mantra doesn't mean simply some letters of the alphabet, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. It means Krishna's form. All the books describe that, what Krishna looks like, and his associates, what they look like. It means Krishna's qualities. They all describe what the different emotions and feelings are, the exchanges of love in the material world and the spiritual world. It describes about Krishna's associates, their activities. This is what all the books are about.
That is the Hare Krishna mantra. Everything is, if we remember Krishna, then we remember how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. These things come. His form, his quality, his pastimes. So everything there is, the Hare Krishna mantra is like, is not different from Krishna. Krishna is, everything comes from Krishna, but everything there is coming from the Hare Krishna mantra. It's just a question of chanting in such a way that these things, learning how to chant, so that all these remembrances come about Krishna in the proper devotional mood. Anything else?
Do you have any practical tips how we can increase the taste for chanting?
Practical tips. Probably this is the first thing. I guess the first thing is don't skip beats. Chant this Maha Mantra clearly, but not, sometimes we emphasize our minds. We're worried about where our minds are going. As soon as our mind, as soon as we start chanting, then the mind becomes very active. It goes, boo, my mind, there's my mind. It's going boo, did you hear it? It went boo. My mind went boo. Oh no, I've disturbed my mind. What to do now? Maybe I should chant more. All right, there's boo, boo, boo. Oh no, there I want to chant. My mind's going boo. What did my mind say anyhow? What is it saying? Boo, boo, boo. What do you mean, boo, boo, boo? It's going, don't chant so loud. Don't chant so attentively. You can't do it. You're going to have a heart attack. You're straining yourself too much. I'm warning you. You're not going to get anything out of it anyhow. I'm not going to stop talking to you. Besides that, there's so many more things, more pleasant to think about. Think about all your things that your anxiety, all the different things that you have to worry about. You know, are you going to get, what are you going to eat today? I don't know. Come on, tell me, what are you going to eat? Do you think it's going to be good? Did you really get enough sleep last night? I can't remember. Well, think about it. Does she love you? Does she love you not? Which one do you want? You got a lot of things to think about. This is a good time. No one's bothering you right now. You can solve a lot of problems. Do something practical. Don't get so sentimental. You know, what is it? I should be chanting my rounds. All right, you can get your rounds done, but don't take it too seriously. Besides that, if you got made any advancement, you get puffed up and you fall down in here. So what's the sense of taking it too seriously? You know, just chant your, get them done as quickly as possible, and then you can do something important. You can eat. Oh wow. So the mind will immediately start preaching to us. So the most practical thing is too many things to think about, get a piece of paper and pencil, and write down things that are truly important so you don't have to think about them when you're chanting Hare Krishna. And just concentrate on the chanting, on the quality of the chanting. Instead of worrying about everything else, try to hear, what is the sound vibration? How am I chanting? Am I actually chanting to Krishna? Does it actually sound to me like I'm actually believing that there's a Krishna and I'm asking him personally, and Srimati Radharani, to engage me in their loving service? Or does it sound like I'm not really talking to Krishna? I'm not asking Krishna anything. I'm talking to the impersonal Brahman somewhere. What does it sound like? Does it sound loving, or is it, oh Krishna, I'm suffering so much. Oh, what's wrong? Well, I got this ingrown toenail and it's hurting me. Can you take care of it? Oh, the energy of the Lord, oh the Lord, I'm suffering. Help, help. So does it sound like we're trying to engage in a loving service, or what does it sound, the quality might? My chanting is, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna. So we should try and see what is the actual mood I'm chanting in. What is is it devotional, or is it, you know, full of lamentation and anxiety, and, you know, does it have any faith at all with this process? Do I have any brains behind my chanting? Am I thinking at all what I'm doing? Or am I thinking, looking around, everyone else is falling asleep too. No one's going to notice. Hare Krishna. Probably you're asleep. No, I'm in trance. You just don't understand. Because you were asleep too. So we have to see what is the quality of my chanting. We have to honestly see and then try to improve it. And Krishna says, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. They'll help us. They'll give us the intelligence if we try. Whatever we try for, Krishna will help. So if we try to improve our chanting, then Krishna will tell us how to do it. So he'll give us the example of Prabhupada and other devotees who are chanting nicely. He'll give us the instructions that Prabhupada has given us, how to improve our chanting. He'll help us remember it. And if we take them seriously and try to apply it, then we'll see that there is a difference. And we are remembering more often, more consistently, more vividly, remembering Krishna. Whether it's the form of the deities, or the form of different pictures, or with the descriptions in the different devotional literatures, and then we're actually beginning to feel and experience where their emotions are. We're realizing what is Krishna consciousness, because we're feeling it. And it's not coming from us, it's coming from these remembrances of these great personalities and how they're feeling. Then we'll understand what is consciousness of Krishna mean. Yes.
Devotional service. Sometimes now I feel like, oh, come on, I'm working for these people. These Hare Krishna, you know, institute, or Hare Krishna conscious people, you know. Sometimes I'm a big man in my own house, and I'm coming out and I'll be doing some petty jobs, without a stand, much about the benefit of devotional service, what we gain out of it.
Yeah. Well, what we're supposed to gain out of service and devotion, we're supposed to gain devotion. That's the first thing we're supposed to gain, is the idea of devotion. Now, working for the Hare Krishnas, we're supposed to be working for Hare and Krishna. That's who we're working for, Hare Krishna. That's Srimati Radharani and Krishna. And the idea is that if we understand the philosophy, we'll understand that everything belongs to them. That it's not that I'm so kind, I'm using my energy to serve these people. I don't even know why, but somehow or another. No, actually it's Krishna's energy, and we're utilizing his energy properly by utilizing it to please him. And the result is, should be, is that we think that we get the opportunity to become conscious of Krishna, to think of him. That in the material world, when we're working for what we think is ours, that we're going to get something in the material world, then we can't, it's very difficult to remember Krishna. We can't easily become Krishna conscious that way. But if we're working for Krishna, to please him, to please his Srimati Radharani, and his different energies, working as a servant of them, then the result is it becomes very easy to think of them. And since they're the source of all pleasure, they're the source of all spiritual loving exchanges, original loving exchanges, all loving exchanges originate from them, then we get an idea of what our real spiritual consciousness is. We can wake up to our spiritual identity. So that's the benefit of becoming, working for Krishna. Now, if I am working without the proper understanding, if I think that these are just ordinary people just like I am, and that they're just trying to get me to do something because it's cheap, and they're giving me a philosophy so they don't have to pay me anything, but they're giving a lot of service out of it. That if that's my conception, then of course I don't know very much about Krishna, etc. But even if that's true, but at least I'll be less anxiety when I do that work. The quality of that work will be better than the quality of work and anxiety to gain more and more things in the material world. This idea that this is mine, I gotta maintain it, look at it, it's falling apart. I'm lamenting, and I got to get more before this falls apart. After this falls apart, and I got to get another one. So it's either hankering, lamentation, material world, whatever I'm doing. But if I work for Krishna, trying to please Krishna, then there's nothing to be anxiety about. There's nothing to lament about. There's nothing to hanker for. There's only the hope that somehow or another I can become more conscious of Krishna. And in that consciousness, I can feel spiritual happiness, and I can become enlightened as my spiritual identity and how I illumine everyone and everything is related to Krishna. Is that right? Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Grandhara Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Devo Pramanande. Samaveda Bhakti Vrindi Ki Jai. Thank you.
Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.